machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnon Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So at different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. And also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center in one of the companies that has made that solution. And we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So this is, imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there is a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to note about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy.
God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem, how is the process towards the solution, and what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space.
All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. Employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like this linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I've been Sarah Dema.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
القرآن يهدي للتي
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیبه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains. Thank you.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So truly, what an honor it is to be speaking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, a persona which one can speak for an eternity, but it seems like there are still things to say. Now, this is because Imam Ali alayhi salam, he was the living, breathing miracle of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, just as the Holy Quran was the silent, living, breathing miracle of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, the divinely appointed Imam, the divinely appointed successor to the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings upon him, and also this source of wisdom and knowledge, who was the embodiment of the teachings of both the Holy Prophet and the Holy Quran. We find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, you know, he speaks about Muawiyah, and this was at a time when Imam Ali alayhi salam was the caliph of the Muslims, and Muawiyah had rebelled against Imam Ali alayhi salam, despite the commander of the believers being the rightful caliph of the Muslims. And so Muawiyah revolts, he rebels in audaciousness and arrogance against Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, this of course eventually ensues into a great war, which is the Battle of Siffin, and unfortunately many countless hundreds and thousands of Muslims were killed because of this rebellion that Muawiyah had done against the rightful caliph of the Muslims. And so here somebody said to Imam Ali alayhi salam, they said, you know, Amir al-Mu'mineen, O commander of the believers, you know, you're not very cunning when it comes to these matters. You see, Muawiyah, he is incredibly cunning. And so here it's really important for us to understand something, and this is the response of Imam Ali alayhi salam. His Eminence says that Muawiyah is not more cunning than I am. Matter of fact, if I wanted, I would be the most cunning of all the Arabs, and no Arab would have been able to be more cunning than I am. But I abide by the laws and the commandments of Allah, and Muawiyah does not. And so this is something that's really important in our lives, is that there are times and situations in our lives where we can be cunning, we can be shrewd, and not in the positive sense. For example, a mu'min is always clever. This is another one of the statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam. A mu'min is clever, smart, intelligent, right? But not necessarily cunning. Cunning and shrewdness, they have negative connotations to them. And that's because they are outside of the bounds of the rules and regulations that Allah the Almighty has put upon people. And so being cunning, like Muawiyah, is to break the rules of Allah. But to be clever, like Imam Ali alayhi salam, is to work within the confines of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, for example, to remain truthful, or to remain honest, or to not break the commandments of Allah. A very beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: أقيلوا ذوي المروءات عثراتهم، فما يعثر منهم عاثر إلا ويد الله بيده يرفعه.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Forgive the shortcomings of considerate people, because when they fall into error, Allah raises them up."
we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
And so when we talk about this issue of Hadith Saqalain, where the Prophet says, I am leaving two things behind, the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, you cannot separate one from the other. Ali was with the Quran and Quran is with Ali. Just one more example about it. When Surah Bara'at was revealed, the ninth surah of the Quran, one of the last ones to be revealed, the earlier ayat which came, not the whole surah was revealed together in peace form, but the earlier ayat which came, which was the ultimate and given to the mushrikeen of Makkah after the conquest of Makkah, where they were given 4 months grace time to think about Islam. Islam will not be forced on them. And if they agree, that's fine. Otherwise, after 4 months, they have to vacate Makkah, because Makkah is now a sanctuary for Muslims. So all this Taliban and ISIS, who think you spread Islam by sword only, this is against the Sunnah of Rasulullah. He's giving 4 months grace period for them to think about it, study about it, question about it. And so when those ayat came as a declaration against the mushrikeen in Makkah, Rasulullah decided, according to the norm those days, to choose an elderly companion of Rasulullah and asked him to take that to Makkah, and this was Abu Bakr. Take this and declare this to the mushrikeen of Makkah. While he left Medina, traveling towards Makkah, Jibreel comes down. And this is in our books as well as Sunni books. Jibreel comes down and he says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving you the message that the bara'at that you have to declare to the mushrikeen, either you do it yourself or rajulun minka. Either go and announce that only yourself or somebody who is from you. Min niyyat. Remember, even in this khutbah we recited yesterday, where the Prophet says, Anta ka nafsi, you are like my soul. You are from me, I am from you. This is one occasion. He calls then Ali. And interesting, Jibreel didn't say who. The message was only, you go yourself or send somebody minka, who is from you. And Ali called Ali, Rasulullah called Ali. He says, go with a fast horse until you reach Abu Bakr. Take the ayat from him and go and declare that in Mecca. Of course, Abu Bakr would be kind of disappointed. He came back. He says, Rasulullah, what happened? Did Allah say something wrong about me? And Rasulullah said, no, nothing. Nothing personal. The command was, either I go myself, أو رجلٌ منك, or somebody from you. And when I looked around, there is nobody closer to me other than Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wa salam.
At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi واقبل ثناي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائك بحق محمد.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God,
my master and my lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إِنَّكَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Citizens under surveillance.
To watch without being seen, that's the spirit of surveillance. It's always present in the citizens' lives, but in the past 10 years, along with the pace of technological advances, we have witnessed a revolution. Targeted surveillance has gradually turned into mass surveillance worldwide. In the past, it only focused on public areas, but now it's violating our privacy. Closing the door or drawing the curtains at home is not enough anymore. The invisible eye is settled in our privacy. Online items and games, activities on social networks, local details of our smartphones, and inquiries on the search engines. Our online life turns into data. The information that when processed makes a new form of identity on which we have no control. Our private life could be laid bare in a matter of moments. This is what we will watch in this preventive film. A few minutes would be enough for four hackers to tap into all this information. This experience is a warning. Our online life doesn't belong to us. Never have we been scrutinized so much. 70% of our calls by mobile phones are recorded. Millions of hours of discussion by webcam are diverted by the secret services. Our existence is now accessible on the internet in the form of databases, and every single detail of our lives is retained in the memories by the storage centers. Who records this valuable information? How is it exploited? And for what purposes? We have conducted a survey for 2 years in Europe and in the United States. We went to meet the experts in digital surveillance, hackers and whistleblowers, and also the web giants such as Google or Facebook, and also the secret services that process and collect our data. As the boundaries between surveillance, technology, and power fade, we will see that the gap is growing between two groups. On one side, defenders of individual freedoms, and on the other, supporters of cyber surveillance. A paradigm shift that can lead the citizens towards a new social model.
I think, you know, our modern societies are facing a choice about the future, and I think it's fundamentally a political choice. I think we could decide through an action to say, well, you know, we don't care very much about this. We don't care very much if the government gathers up all this information. We don't care very much about who has access to it, how it's used. We don't care if our children grow up in such a world of constant surveillance. And I think that could happen.
And it was to protect our privacy that on September 5, 2001, only a few days before the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the European Union was going to adopt the historical sanctions against the United States in order to make it cease the large-scale spying on phone calls and fax messages, and especially to make it give up the establishment of email surveillance. Europe knew that since the Second World War, the NSA, along with the intelligence services of its Anglo-Saxon allies, monitored the old continent under a program called Echelon. The result? The pressure was inflicted anyhow. The prosecutor himself considers that Google, as much as the search engine is concerned, is not responsible for the data processing. Accordingly, Mario's complaint is inadmissible. But the last word in this affair, after being deliberated upon, would be rendered by the judge of the European Court.
As controller.
For the first time, it came to light that the NSA had enlisted large internet groups for surveillance purposes. In this document, there is a list of the companies in all the areas to which the agency can access. The internet has become the main vector of the mass surveillance model, which affects everyone.
Talk about the NSA issue, which obviously caused controversy back home, but also here in Europe. This is not a situation in which we are rifling through the ordinary emails of German citizens or American citizens or French citizens or anybody else. This is not a situation where we simply go into the internet and start searching any way that we want.
Now everyone's personal and private lives and associated transaction and data history becomes the equivalent of secret government property held for years as pre-crime data just in case it is needed in the future.
The policies are the means to block the road of the NSA. Although the European Parliament remains sensitive to the problematic issue of individual liberties, in autumn of 2014, France votes indifferently to the Bill of Military Programming 2014-2019, which makes it possible to monitor every citizen through their online life. Concurrently, this article renews the law on wiretapping adopted in 1991, entered into force in a span of less than a week before the attacks of January 2015. To frame the issue of eavesdropping by the intelligence services, American lawmakers opted for a secret court composed of 12 independent judges. In France, on the contrary, the CNCIS is responsible for verifying the legality of the interception authorizations. It is only accountable in front of the executive power. France is far from the German mobilization about the surveillance. La Quadrature du Net is one of the few French associations actively involved in the European debates.
We can act now and make a difference for ourselves and everyone we know by using free and open source software that belongs to everyone and that we can always control. By switching to decentralized services that make it possible to know where our data is and what happens to it. And by using end-to-end encryption to guarantee that our private communications are, well, private. So let's raise awareness about the impact of global surveillance. And let's ensure that our political leaders protect our privacy and promote technologies that, instead of controlling people, liberate them.
The purpose of the National Commission for Computer and Liberties is to protect our private life. Monitoring the net, the control device, is not satisfactory. During a hearing at the National Assembly, Jean-Marie Delarue,
the new CNCIS president, said that the risk is great to see the development of the new, more or less intrusive approaches without any legislation and therefore without any guarantees about the safety interception. What might look like a company whose security mechanism would use the full potentiality of big data?
In the future, my nightmare is that there will be the ability to have a reasonable prediction of what people will do and what attitudes they will hold. And you can imagine in that moment, we will find out that Edward Snowden is likely to disclose information and be a dissident prior to him actually acting. And it doesn't have to be perfect, of course, it never will be. So not only will we catch Edward Snowden, but we'll catch three or four other people prior to them acting. And there we can see a sort of technical totalitarianism. It is very important that we prevent this from happening. Anyone who thinks that this is science fiction is just simply ignorant of history.
Finding the culprit before they commit the crime. This is not science fiction. The world of prediction is appearing. In Santa Cruz, California, a pioneer police unit is already using prediction in order to help the patrols and to maximize the success of their interventions. It is the computer that guides this new form of surveillance. The issue of anticipation is a popular doctrine in military tactics.
Cameras are, I don't think, necessarily an effective deterrent. What they do is they give you information after the crime occurs. For us, we're hoping to mitigate and stop crime before it occurs. We're hoping that we, either by our presence being there, that we encourage crime not to occur, or that if crime does occur, we're there to catch the suspects in the act of that crime. And so we're hoping that with those two things, we actually mitigate the crime before it happens, and you don't need a camera to tell you what happened.
The PredPol project is not a simple production of the local police. It is an innovation by the science department at Santa Clara University.
So PredPol is short for predictive policing. And the idea behind PredPol is we give software directly to the officers in the field to help them do their jobs better. And how we do that is we give them locations and times of the day of areas of the city that are at high risk for criminal incidents to happen, and so they can go into those areas and try to prevent crime before it occurs.
Laid out a map of the city, as you see here, we can see where the crimes have actually occurred and now where PredPol thinks that they will occur. And that's what's different about how we use the data here with the predictive policing model. We're not just looking at yesterday's crime. We want to know, where is today's crime going to happen? And the data, combined with the power of the computer, is able to tell us that.
At PredPol, our algorithms utilize past crime data. So we take in the past 5 to 10 years of a police department's data, and we process that each day, going back from 10 years all the way to crimes that happened yesterday. And then we use that information to predict where crime is likely to happen tomorrow.
A new outlet for the use of data. It is a mathematical view towards the events and the behaviors in order to anticipate the future and reduce the danger.
An officer might only be able to patrol 1% of the city. So our goal at PredPol is to maximize the amount of crime in that 1% of the city so that they can go into those areas and interrupt crime. So you might see, for example, that our algorithms can capture 10 to 15% of crime in that 1% of the city. So you're getting a 10 to 15 times improvement of accuracy over random patrols. So certainly the data that companies like Google and Facebook are collecting can be used to predict a lot of things. Even probably certain types of criminal incidents, you know, can be predicted by people's Twitter feeds or their Facebook feeds. And certainly other aspects of our lives can be understood in a quantitative way by analyzing the vast amounts of data these companies collect.
The answer is now in the hands of the citizens. Seeking some solutions to face the challenges of a digital world without any boundaries is the subject of the meetings at Chaos Communication Congress. In this hotbed of computer dissent, by mastering the technology, we learn to protect our privacy and to hide ourselves from uncontrollable monitoring. Here, we also think about the society of tomorrow and about defending this ideal, which is more and more abstract, which is democracy.
I don't think we should have to take extraordinary measures to protect our privacy in a free society. We take extraordinary measures in a prison society. That's how people have to communicate, because they live in a world where they know that their actions are always being monitored, and if they step out of line, then they're going to get caught. So they engage in all sorts of tricks to protect their privacy and their communication. That's what we have to avoid. We can't allow ourselves to believe we live in such a world. We have to continue to assert the freedom that people in a democratic society should expect.
The range of the implemented surveillance programs is beyond imagination. It questions the validity of those who are in the shadows. The optic nerve, revealed by The Guardian, is a GCHQ program that has recorded 1.8 million conversations on Yahoo webcams between the individuals in Europe just to test the automatic systems and the biometric facial recognition. The strictest privacy is violated beyond any legal framework. The freedom of the citizens leaves room for the reason of the state.
What I think is completely illegitimate is that he stole so much material of such high sensitivity, and that journalists are now, piece by piece, exposing the inner workings of intelligence agencies. We will all lose. We will all be less secure as a result of that kind of exposure.
In the midst of the turmoil caused by Snowden's revelations, Obama was paying an official visit to Germany. What was within the area of secrecy becomes a public matter. The credibility of the greatest leaders of the planet is at stake.
Talk about the NSA issue, which obviously caused controversy back home, but also here in Europe. This is not a situation in which we are rifling through, you know, the ordinary emails of German citizens or American citizens or French citizens or anybody else. This is not a situation where we simply go into the internet and start searching any way that we want. This is a circumscribed, narrow system directed at us being able to protect our people, and all of it is done under the oversight of the courts.
However, even the German chancellor does not escape the supervision of the NSA.
Whether the French and the Spanish and the German governments simply didn't know that there was wiretapping and intercepting and searching of electronic communications going on, or whether their objections are hypocritical, I think it's probably a mix of both. There's certainly plenty of hypocrisy.
The as if nothing had happened in the previous weeks. In January 2014, President Barack Obama limits the monitoring of the NSA in the U.S. while he renews the all-out surveillance programs in the world. A month later, President François Hollande was on an official visit to the United States.
The example of spying on heads of state and heads of government, and then the symbolic gesture of Angela Merkel showing her portable phone, that has two sides. Of course, you cannot focus on Angela Merkel's phone only, because it's all our phones which are subject to monitoring. And it's not just fixing the problem of whether a certain head of state or 10 or 20 heads of state are or not are followed or not. It's the structural surveillance in our society which needs to be addressed. So I use Angela Merkel's phone as a metaphor for everybody's phone is at stake.
Germany arranges a protest. 25,000 people gather in the venue of the demonstration called Freedom Not Fear. Here, the case of Snowden clarifies the fear of a mass surveillance, which awakens the ghosts of the past. Pat Alun, known by his hacker name, created Digital Courage 27 years ago. This is the oldest association fighting for the defense of privacy and data protection in Germany. 13 years after Europe's abortive riposte against Echelon, the U.S. surveillance program for the European citizens, the issue of mass surveillance returns to the front stage of the European Parliament. The institution opened its doors to those who were once regarded as simple protesters.
First round of questions by the rapporteur and the shadows.
The NSA has been guided at every moment by a desire to obscure, evade, sidestep, misinterpret, ignore legal authorities for the purpose of expanding its data collection practices. People concerned about privacy and civil liberties, whether they are in Europe or in the United States, must share an equal concern about that problem.
Now everyone's personal and private lives and associated transaction and data history becomes the equivalent of secret government property, held for years as pre-crime data, just in case it is needed in the future.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. President Raisi says the military action Iran took